Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:01 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 5th, and we had some meaningful moves right across asset classes in here today, but perhaps the pullback that we saw on silver was the one that really stood out. Silver has been trending higher since June. It had broken its sequence of lower rally highs in the middle of June. But then the pace of the advance definitely picked up in the last 10 days. And the 70-cent move on the upside was the biggest dynamic that we'd seen in the context of the entire move 2 days ago. I introduced an in-the-money stop at that stage, or I guess probably more correctly a trailing stop, because I would have moved it higher if the price had gone up towards $20. $20 is an historic area of resistance, and there is no questioning that silver is quite overextended on the upside in the short term. But the bigger picture is that silver has been trending down for a prolonged period, and this is a very meaningful change in terms of the direction. And there is a strong likelihood that we've seen a peak of near-term significance, that there is potential here for the unwinding of some short-term overbought conditions. This is equally true of all of the precious metals. Platinum, for example, got right up to test the psychological $1,000 area, and that's a place where it has encountered resistance on multiple occasions since really 2016 and then onwards. So it's a natural area where we might anticipate that there is some profit-taking, some pause for some consideration, and then consolidation in this area would not be all that surprising. And gold prices, didn't accelerate and weren't quite as impressive in the last 2 weeks on the upside as either silver or platinum. They were also weak today, but not in the same kind of dynamic manner. Of course, gold doesn't have quite the same overbought condition relative to the trend mean as the other two do either, but it does suggest that we are in for some pause and consolidation, and not least because we've had a very impressive breakout. Against this background, we have to consider that the quantity of bonds that have got negative yields is currently around it's less than 16.4 trillion, and it failed to sustain the upward break that we saw at the end of August, when it got briefly above 17 trillion. But when we look at individual bond contracts, the Bund future had a contract change 2 days ago, and it was down over a full point in here today. It has broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. If we zoom back out and look at the weekly chart, we're going to get a big gap on the downside because of that contract change, but it does suggest some profit taking was initiated as a result of that contract change, and futures investors having to make the decision about whether they were going to roll on their position or take some profits. And considering the acceleration that we've had in the bond markets, then what we've seen is some profit taking is now taking place, and that does suggest that there's scope for a reversion back towards the mean. The move that we had in gilts today was one of the larger ones, and there is a wide, I would say a very large downside weekly key reversal here, and that does suggest a peak of at least near-term significance. This is a very big move. If we get downside follow-through next week, then it greatly increases the potential that we're going to see a reversion back towards the mean, and a 6 or 7 point move in bonds is a pretty substantial development. Of course, we've had the biggest moves in European and Japanese debt, particularly because of those negative yields. But even in US Treasuries, the 10-year Treasury price was down almost a full point. When we look at that on a daily basis, then it hasn't quite broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. It would certainly need downside follow-through. This is still a reasonably consistent uptrend. But if we get an additional follow-through on the downside for European bonds, well, then that is going to translate into some weakness for US bonds, considering that the incredible compression in yields we've seen since October of last year has, in no small part, been driven by this comparative or the relative value play in terms of trying to capture positive yields when just about the entire yield curve of a substantial number of European countries was negative yielding. Part of the reason why we're getting this rebound has been because there is speculation that China and the USA are going to sit down and talk in October. This is just the repeat of previous releases that they were going to sit down and talk further. But the bigger picture here is that the Chinese economy is slowing down. There's a graphic I'm posting today of the comparison of the price of property in a number of Chinese cities relative to London. Well, that does tell us that the Chinese housing market is really very overextended. Of course, it also tells us that there has been some relative devaluation of UK property prices because of the downtrend in the pound over the last 4 or 5 years. Now, when we start to think about the S&P 500, it popped on the upside in here today, completing this range that's persisted for the last month. It's within really only about 25 points of its all-time peak. And this is, I think, one of the more important points, that we've had a very orderly consolidation in the region of the trend mean and the upper side of that range that's persisted for the last 18 months. Then when we look at the consistency of the trend all the way up from the lows in 2009, then we've had three major consolidations along the way, each of them being a year and a half in duration and punctuated by some pretty severe pullbacks, each of which has found support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And this week's upper dynamic is a rather large one. It also is following the upside key from the region of the trend mean that we saw all the way back in May. And May feels like a long time ago, and there has been a lot of worry expressed. There is a huge quantity of cash on the sidelines, and people have been extraordinarily worried about a crash, and not least because they're anticipating that US yields are going to go negative right along with Europe and Japan. And that might occur in a recession, but we're not quite there yet in terms of the recession. One thing we know is that in the last two occasions when the yield curve has become inverted, the stock market has done phenomenally well in the year subsequent. And that is, I think, one of the more important points, that in 1998, the market went up 50% after the yield curve became inverted. In 2006, it was about 30%. Now, we do get serious bear markets after those kinds of events because there's bubbly characteristics. Now, we do have bubbly characteristics today, that when we look at the outlook for WeWork, where they were attracting a valuation of $47 billion, with investors willing to support that valuation at the last funding round, at the same time as the CEO taking $700 million as he sold some of his own holdings ahead of the IPO. Well, that was already pretty egregious behavior. Now they're looking at a valuation of about 20 billion. So that's a very substantial haircut for the last funding round. Then, when we look at the performance of some of the companies that have been trading as new IPOs, well, Uber is still a fraction of where it was immediately after the IPO. And despite the fact that it bounced in here today, it's hard to see where profits are going to come from. Lyft is also still with a downward bias. What I thought was really quite interesting is Slack. Mean, Slack is probably really shouldn't look at it on a weekly basis. Slack is an instant messaging company, and it rallied well off its lows in here today, and has retested its IPO level following the decline since the day after that. But I fail to see why Slack is so much more valuable as an instant messaging service than Skype is, or indeed Discord is. And this is another company where the striving for ye for any kind of profitability is going to be a major struggle. Well, then of course we have WeWork, which may in fact be end up defaulting on all of its leases eventually. And we have Peloton, which is selling extraordinarily overpriced exercise equipment with Wi-Fi capability. That is rather extraordinary, considering that if one were to buy the treadmill for over 4,000 and spend the monthly of $40, well, you can join a health club, or you can join, in many places, you can join a country club for less than the 4,000 initiation and have a lot more services provided to you. So this is rather extraordinary that they're going for an IPO, and it's very unlikely that they're ever going to make money, not least because when you think about this cardio burn that they're providing, this is a sector that is incredibly faddish. I've been taking spinning classes for most of the last year, and I do enjoy them, but at the same time, I really think that it is a faddish kind of thing, and I do like to intersperse them with other workouts. So we see lots of evidence of overvaluation in the private sector. We see lots of evidence of overvaluation in the bond sector. There's been a huge quantity of bonds issued by companies like Apple and Disney. And why not? They can lock in 30-year debt at about 2%. And I think that's a no-brainer for those companies. Apple is continuing to firm from its most recent higher reaction low. Facebook is getting into the dating game, and Match.com has demonstrated that that is a very profitable route. When we think about the kind of business model that Facebook has, where it has access to all this data, there is a very significant market to be had from the dating services that it could potentially provide. When we then think about Amazon, well, the share is steadying from the region of its trend mean, and this is the first upward dynamic we've seen. And if we think about this in terms of the log scale, where the trend has been punctuated by pullbacks, and this was the biggest pullback that we've seen in the course of the trend, then we also know that it paused at about 500, it paused at about 700, paused at about 850, paused at 1,000, paused at about 1,500 and 2,000. So, well, I think people will start to be thinking, well, the next area it's going to pause is about 2,500, and that's assuming that the trend remains consistent. So I do think that we have bubbly activity in some property markets, particularly in China. We have bubbly activity in the private equity sector. I think that we are going to see an increasing number of funds that invested in some of these highly valued private assets running into trouble. We have a bubble evolving in the sovereign debt markets, and then, of course, there is the potential that we're going to get a bubble in the equity markets. The relative value play here is that bond yields have been bid up to incredibly low, or bond prices have been bid up, and the yield has contracted to incredibly low levels. That has made a relative value play for equities, and there is abundant potential that the yield differential is going to close. The Nasdaq is within just a few points of breaking on the upside. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is also within just a few points of completing this range. Then when we think about the banking sector, well, they don't do particularly well in a low yield environment, but any prospect of yields improving should be positive for the banks, and they are firming from the region of the lower side of this range. So I think that there is a clear potential here that we're going to see markets break on the upside. The Russell 2000 is firming from the region of the lower side of its range. It really does need to follow through on the upside to confirm a move back above the trend mean, and really above 1600 to really suggest that we're back in a demand dominated environment. Then when we think about just refreshing Dow theory, the Dow Jones Industrials Average has been going sideways for about a year and a half, and rallied this week from the region of the trend mean in pretty emphatic fashion. The transportation index has been lagging, so then I think investors will be looking quite keenly to see if it can push through the 11,000 and potentially on to new high ground. If we get both, well, then that is going to be a Dow theory confirmation. Now, when we look at what's going on in the UK, the pound was in positive territory in here today. It is now looking like an upside weekly key reversal. Having been at a new low earlier on this week, it is now pushing on, and it is closing. Well, we'll see what it does tomorrow, but if it can close at a new recovery high, then we'll definitely have an upside key reversal. The machinations that are going on with regard to Brexit continue to animate a lot of discussion. The chance to reform the UK economy with a true Brexit remains a tantalizing choice. The big question is whether there's really appetite for it, and whether and I do think that there is going to be an election. The opposition parties simply don't trust Boris Johnson. They really think that he is capable of exiting the EU while the Parliament is shut ahead of the election, and that's why they're pushing for an extension of the Brexit negotiations, or the Brexit deadline, for an additional 3 months to allow an election to in fact take place. And this election is going to be an incredibly important one for the UK. But the pound rallying, and most particularly the pound's rally against the euro, is pricing in the potential that Brexit isn't going to happen at all. And that is a that is going to leave an awful lot of people very upset. But of course the problem is that it doesn't matter who or I guess what the eventual answer is going to be. There's going to be a lot of people upset. When we look at this trend in the pound versus the euro, we've had failed breaks left and right, and the most recent of those was on the downside, and that suggests that the rate is going to go back up and test the 115 area. The FTSE 100 was one of the only stock markets in the world today which was in negative territory, which is a testament to just how reliant it is on the pound for support. Then the euro was also in positive territory, but not in nearly the same kind of dynamic manner, and it gave up the entire advance by the end of the day. So we are seeing the continued weakness of the euro. The strong likelihood is that Europe is willing to do whatever it takes to ensure it has a weak currency. Its exporters are on the cusp of a recession, and I think that's a very meaningful change. When we then think about what's going on in terms of China, they have cut their reserve requirements, and the renminbi was a little stronger in here today. The A-share index was well off its highs, but they are trying to support it. But on the other hand, there is increasing evidence of a property bubble. And Xi Jinping is talking to the party faithful about belt tightening and accepting lower growth for over 30 years. And that kind of talk is not supportive of the view that China is going to try and embark upon a massive new stimulus. They've been very tailored in their measures so far, and they're likely to continue on that path, and that's not particularly good news for their property markets. In the next 18 months, we could potentially see a bubble form on Wall Street, but the risks for the medium term are in the private equity sector, in private asset valuations, but most particularly in Chinese regional banks and properties. And I think that is a sector we need to continue to monitor. It also suggests that there is very little prospect of the renminbi strengthening through 7 in any time soon. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.